This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. If you're going to talk about Charlotte's music scene, and we are, it makes sense to do it in a venue that plays host to musicians all the time. The Evening Muse in Noda, and that is where we are for this edition of Charlotte Talks. We've had a flirtatious relationship with the music business in this city. At one point in the early 20th century, it looked as though we'd become the epicenter for country music. Nashville somehow stole that title away from us. But music has always been part of our culture. Musicians have always been able to call this city home. And in recent years, it appears something is happening. Despite, or maybe because of, the digital revolution, Charlotte's music scene seems to be growing stronger and becoming more influential. We're going to explore that this hour with Jeff Hain, the music director for Creative Loafing Charlotte, who has also been covering live music in town for the last 8 years. He goes to about 100 performances in the area every year and still has time to do this program from time to time. Welcome back, Jeff.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Greg McCraw is the owner of Max Music. That's an independent promotion company that presents more than 500 events each year here at the Evening Muse, at the Neighborhood Theater, the Double Door Inn, as well as the Night Theater, the Stage Door Theater, Spirit Square's McGlowan Theater, which, by the way, is named after another notable, internationally known Charlotte musician, Lunas McGlowan. Thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you.
And James Willimore is founder and executive director of Croquet Records. It is a non-profit label focused on developing North Carolina songwriters and bands. And we'll talk to you about all of that and more tonight. Thank you for being here, too.
Thanks. Good to be here.
And because this is a program about music set in a music venue, we're going to hear throughout the hour from Perry Fowler and Mark Barron, better known as Sinners and Saints. Take it away, guys.
Thanks, Jim. Thank you.
Sinners and Saints. I think that's a song called Crazy Eight, if I'm not mistaken. Why the name Sinners and Saints? And which one of them are you?
Well, I
the guy with the mustache, you're the sinner, aren't you?
Yeah, as he shows up first is usually the saint for the gig.
Where did the name come from?
An old song of mine, actually. There's a line that says, we're all sinners and we're all saints. And it kind of... actually, an old EP, I had the same title of that, so we just kind of made the band name.
Okay. How representative of Charlotte music? You know, we could only fit one band on the stage here tonight, so we can't do hip-hop and this and something else. We only have one band here. How representative of Charlotte music is that sound?
I think it's a great representation of a part of Charlotte sound. Charlotte's music scene runs the entire gamut from what you just heard to death metal and electronic music and just everything in between.
But we seem to be a nice home for Americana. This has an Americana sound to it, because David Childers comes to mind, the early Avett Brothers come to mind. This kind of feel is that early Avett Brothers kind of feel. It's kind of kicking around, you know?
Yeah, probably the close proximity of the Appalachian Mountains and bluegrass roots and all of that have come through. I mean, Merlefest is right down the road, and there's definitely a good energy for that.
And this city has had a long music history. I alluded to it in the opening. It goes back to the 1920s, and WBT Radio, if you'll pardon the expression, was on the air back in 1922. And in the 30s and 40s, they were bringing country music to the rest of the country because of their 50,000-watt signal. And it became a pretty influential city in that musical genre. RCA had a recording studio on Tryon Street because of that. And like everything else in Charlotte, we tear down the history and forget about it. Does the history of music in Charlotte play any role in the current health of music in Charlotte, or have we forgotten all of it?
I'm sure some people still remember it.
Or does it matter? That's the question.
It does, but I think each new generation and each new kind of wave that comes through the town is kind of creating their own history. Mm-hmm. And I've been here for 8 years, and the music scene as it was 8 years ago is different than it is today, whether it be because of venues or bands that are still together, no longer together.
And you've been promoting in Charlotte for, what, 20 years?
Almost 20 years, yeah. And I would agree, things have changed. Bands that were around when I started 20 years ago may not be around any longer, or pieces of them around and other bands.
But isn't that the nature of music everywhere?
I think it is.
It's a rough life, isn't it? Is it a good life? I mean, can you make a living in Charlotte playing music?
If you're playing bars and cover music, yeah.
Cover music means playing other people's songs?
Yeah. But if you want to make it as like a band, you got to travel. And I think that's anywhere, really, any town. You got to get out there.
That's Perry Fowler, by the way. Mark is I don't know which one is Penn and which one is Teller, but Mark doesn't talk. Evidently. Mark.
I don't do magic either.
You're doing magic right now. It's radio. It's going through the air without wires. That's pretty magical. So what is life like for guys like you who play music all the time?
It's tough. It's two jobs.
I was going to ask if this is your day job. Is it not your day job? You have a day job? What do you do for a living? Or of the other living, the other half of your living?
The other living is graphic design for me.
Graphic design. Yep. And you, Mark?
I make drinks.
Most popular man in the room. Right here. Most popular man in the room. You know, there's a musicologist, curator of the Association for Cultural Equity. This is an NPR show, so we have to get highfalutin here. Nathan Salzberg, who said that in the 20s, a lot of recording studios came here and flushed out musicians by putting ads in the paper saying, come audition for our record label. You are in the record business. So does that sound like a good idea to you? It sounds like American Idol to me. I mean, have you done something like that here to find artists, or do you have a whole stable of them already?
I mean, not a whole stable, but I mean, there's some kind of artist showcases and stuff that go around town. I think that helps a lot of people coming up. I know one of the institutions that's been in Charlotte for a long time is the Tosco Music Party. They've had a lot of, you know, up and coming artists on there.
Mm-hmm. And as I said at the beginning, we almost became Nashville back in the 30s and 40s. And the reason we didn't, I'm told by Tom Hanchett at the Museum of the New South, is that Nashville got the Grand Ole Opry, which put country music on the map around the country, and we knew we couldn't fight it. And what's more, we wanted to be an uptown kind of place. Sound familiar? So we let it go. Is the music being made in Charlotte successfully today reflective of an uptown ambition, which we still have, by the way? Or is it something else? Is it more alternative? Is it becoming more colorful?
I think it's becoming more colorful and diverse. Every year there's new and up-and-coming bands and bands that are putting Charlotte on the map through their genre. We have electronic artists that are flying out to California and playing massive EDM festivals all around the country. We have, you know, obviously the Avett Brothers and some more folk rock people putting us on the map that way. There's just a wide variety of people mm-hmm. who have done that. So we talk about Nashville, but I almost sit there and think, well, I don't want to be Nashville because
it's
everyone
all country.
Thinks country, yeah. That's it. And if you're not country, well, you should probably leave and go somewhere else.
So you cover this and you promote these and book acts into venues all over town and have for 20 years. Is there a particular kind of music that this city seems to gravitate toward wanting to participate in?
You mentioned Americana before.
Right.
I think Americana, folk, blues, you know, the Double Doors, the one of the oldest music venues in the Southeast, and certainly started as a blues venue. Rock, indie rock is certainly growing here. I think Jeff could attest to that. Mm-hmm. I think Jeff's right. I think it's across the board.
People gravitate toward good music, whatever genre that might be in. I think.
Yeah, but define that. Try to define good music for somebody.
It's music's in the ear of the beholder kind of thing. Like it's just.
Because if I said Edie Gourmet to you, what would that say? What would that say to you?
But there are people. It hasn't really, they're somewhat venue defined, but not completely, but people will gravitate toward particular venues that house the music that they like best.
Well, you know, Americana, I guess, is a close country cousin to country music in a way, but you've noticed the dearth of country music in Charlotte.
Yeah, I was talking earlier before this started about how if a country artist come to town, they sell out, whether it's Sturgill Simpson selling out for 1,000 people or Kenny Chesney selling out arenas and Tim McGraw and things like that, they sell out and they all do really well here. But there's not a whole lot of locally created country music acts. There's a handful if mm-hmm. you look for them. But
why do you suppose that is? If the big guys are selling out, why don't people aspire to that and fill the smaller venues as they try to
maybe they all went to Nashville.
Jeff Hain is music director or music editor of Creative Loafing. We're also here with Greg McCraw, owner of Max Music, who promotes a lot of music around the area. James Willimore is founder and executive director of Croquet Records. More of that discussion when we come back. Also, music by Sinners and Saints when Charlotte Talks continues from the Evening Muse. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're coming to you tonight, or this morning, from the Evening Muse, although it is night when we're doing this. And among the people we have with us are Perry Fowler and Mark Barron. They are Sinners and Saints, and they're going to, I guess, play the odds here, right? Let's try it.
Eventually end sooner than you hoped it would, like it is and like it should. Don't forget where you came from. Easy go and hard to come. Don't be hasty, take your time. Mine is yours and yours is mine. And we must all overcome the odds. Responsibility. We all got insecurity. So think it over, make up your mind. That'll bring out the dark with time. Sooner than you hoped it would. Like it is and like it should.
Sinners and saints. Now, for our radio audience who can't see you guys perform, there's only two people up here, a guitar player who also plays harmonica, and a bass player, upright bass. But we're hearing all this percussion. Are both of you playing percussion? I know you are, Mark. Are you playing it as well? Let's hear your percussion, Mark, for the radio audience here.
That's mine.
Okay.
That's it.
Perry, you got two. He has. I'm trying to talk here. Wait a minute. You've got 3 foot pedals. You have. I was going to say you have two. You have 3 foot pedals. One plays what? The tambourine. Is that it?
A little tambourine.
Okay. And the other two have brushes on the back of a tom-tom. I guess that's what that is. Did you create this contraption, or is this readily available at a music store near me?
Unfortunately not. It would be a lot easier. no, this has to be made.
Now, you grew up in Lancaster, South Carolina, right? And you grew up, Mark, in Connecticut,
yeah,
and are here by way of Greensboro.
That's right.
You didn't stop at Greensboro. You came for the gold,
yep,
right?
Yeah.
That's a good thing. And as I understand it, you started playing guitar about, what, 5, 6 years ago?
No, I was about 19.
You're about 19?
I'm 37.
That's what I said, 5 or 6 years ago.
And oh, yeah, I'm only 24. Yeah.
And you are trained as a classical guitarist, is that right?
That's right.
But he's playing the guitar. How did that work out? How did you get to the big guitar?
Nobody plays bass.
No.
I've heard that. Why does nobody play bass? It's the wrong clef. It's hard to read.
Maybe. Everybody wants to play guitar.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. There's so many guitar players.
How much of it has to do also with the fact that it's easier to get a gig doing this as opposed to playing classical guitar?
That's for sure.
Is it really?
Yeah. Unless you want to play weddings, I guess.
Weddings and things like that. So how long have you been together as Sinners and Saints?
We're going on 5 years.
That's a long time. Mm-hmm. How many of the songs that you play and that you'll be playing tonight are yours, that songs that you wrote as opposed to somebody else?
The only one that we really play that someone else wrote was Crazy Eights, and that was written by Chris Gervais, a longtime friend from Rock Hill, South Carolina.
What's the songwriting process for the two of you? Is one of you the principal writer, or do you collaborate? How does it work?
Yeah, I kind of write the songs, and I bring them to Mark, and he says, that sucks, or I like it, or I like it better if we did this, and then we...
And then we argue for a long time.
Well, when two people work together, they don't always agree and probably more often disagree. How do you work that out and stay together for 5 years? Because you have to argue about songwriting in the daytime and then come here and perform at night and be like, everything's cool.
We both like whiskey.
Yeah, the whiskey helps.
And I want to point out they're both NPR listeners. I didn't know that our listeners liked whiskey. So I just want to point that out. We'll hear more from them in a little while. How would the three of you up here, James Willimore, Greg McCraw, and Jeff Hain, how would you characterize the health of the music scene in Charlotte today, and you go back 20 years, you go back 8 years, and you go back about how many years?
10 or so.
About 10. Versus then. Are we healthier? Are we hanging on by our fingernails? What's going on here?
We're much healthier now than we were 20 years ago when I started, 10 years ago, even 5 years ago. I think things are changing quickly these days, and we're seeing more and more acts, national acts, come to town that were skipping Charlotte 5 years ago.
What's changed? Why is that happening?
I think one big reason is that we're in a fairly disruptive stage with how people get their music. So when I was growing up, I'd get 45s, I'd get albums, eventually CDs. I tried to give someone a CD not that long ago, and they took it and said, I'm not sure what I'm going to play this on.
Yeah.
Literally. My children, I mean, it's even gone. It was streaming, and now it's not that anymore.
Let me just, by a sound of applause, how many of you get your music today from CDs? How many of you get it in other ways, digital downloads, whatever? How many of you buy music, and how many... And how many of you just stream it, steal it? Whoa!
Well, that's a lie.
I didn't expect that at all. That's good news for you, my friend James. That's good news for you. Now that people are not buying CDs, and they really are buying what we would have called singles when we were kids, because they're buying MP3s off the internet or doing single pieces of music. Is that good for you as a producer of records?
Well, I think one of the best things, going back to the local bands, is the cost of being able to for them to record their original music has really dropped with new technology.
You can do it on your Apple computer if you want.
Yeah, pretty much. So I think that helps them a lot to be able to share their music. And then there's been like a resurgence with vinyl records. They're really popular, especially in the indie music scene. A lot of the smaller record labels are focusing on putting that out. So a lot of bands are giving away their MP3s. They list them as like for free or pay what you want online, and then focus on trying to sell collectible things like, you know, T-shirts and vinyl records, things like that.
Is that why Croquet Records, which is your company, is nonprofit? Because there is no profit to be made, as Sony and RCA are finding out these days? Or is there more to it than that?
Yeah, I mean, there's not so much, with the availability of digital music, a lot of the small record labels only put out, 100, 300 vinyl records from any particular release. I think with all the disruption going on in the music industry, there's a lot of room to look at it from different perspectives. Like we've had good art, like the McCall Center and things here in Charlotte. So why not kind of try to take that perspective and look at music that way?
In a nonprofit way.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk with you about that later on, because you have an interesting idea about how to do, not unlike what the McCall Center does for visual art. You just mentioned it with music. I read a review of Sinners and Saints album, and the reviewer talked about how on one side all of the songs were like this, and on the other side they were like something else. And I thought, side? Really? So is your music available on vinyl? Or was he just being descriptive in some way?
I think he was being descriptive. Descriptive.
Because okay. That was fascinating to me, because CDs don't have sides, and when they do, you put it in upside down. Why is it important, or is it important, that this city, a city the size of Charlotte, a place like this, have a thriving music scene?
Well, I think there's a whole ecosystem, with music, because it's not just the bands. It's you have the music venues and their small businesses, and they need artists to bring people in. You've got like your local record stores, like Lunchbox, that are selling music. So you have a lot. There's also quite a few small recording studios. A good handful throughout the city. So you know, it's sort of like the music, it touches a lot of different, you know, businesses and things like that.
Well, you know, Jeff, because you've been here 8 years, and you certainly know, Greg, that it wasn't too long ago that this street that we're sitting on was completely deserted. Downtown Charlotte, completely deserted after 5 o'clock. And now it's sometimes at 11 or 12 or 1 o'clock at night. If you go down 7th Street to college, of course, it's all the bars, you can't move on those streets. That has to be helping music, or am I completely wrong about that?
Yeah, and I think part of when you were saying, why do we need a thriving music scene? Enjoyment. It's fun. I don't know. I'm a music fan. I've always been a music fan, so it's, you know.
But you can enjoy it pristinely recorded on an MP3. It's
not
like
the
degrading.
Same.
It's not the same experience.
It's not the same as going out and experiencing it live. I don't know. There's different aspects of it, whether it's experiencing a live show or having those stories of I saw, like everyone here will probably claim they saw Eric Clapton at the Double Door that night when nobody was probably there. But, you know, having those stories too of you got to see somebody on this stage at the Evening Muse who then is playing the arena or, you know, different venues like that. Having those stories, I don't know, it's...
You know, when I was in college, I went to college in Maryland, and there was a club in D.C. called the Cellar Door, and it was maybe small, I think it was smaller than this, on M Street, and I saw Billy Joel there. There was barely room on the stage for the piano. It was just him, and he was just starting out, and I'll never forget it. The next time I went back, and it was a club that had acts like Billy Joel and a lot of folk. The next time I went back, it was Barry Manilow. You want to talk about earth-shattering? My goodness. Let's hear some more music. We're talking about music. Let's hear some music. Sinners and Saints here, Perry Fowler and Mark Barron. What you going to play for us?
We're going to play Love and Misery.
Love and Misery. Sounds like my life.
It's everybody's life.
I'm can't believe this can't be true. There'd come a day I'd say this to you. I'll never leave and you'll find your way back to me.
Sinners and Saints on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. We're coming right back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. What you're missing by not being here at the Evening Muse, you'll never know, but that's okay. You're listening to it on the radio. We got Sinners and Saints with us. You just heard them. We're going to hear them again. Before we do that, though, you just sang Love and Misery. Mm-hmm. Who's love, who's misery? Are we talking about in that song? Is it personal or is it just generic?
It's kind of generic. It's a breakup song with loneliness, the way I like to describe it.
Mark, do you ever talk?
No.
No? A man of few words. A solitary man.
Okay. He carries a big stick.
Yeah. He does carry a big stick. Oh, gosh. All right.
Since this doesn't translate to radio, I guess.
Yes. He's playing a big upright bass, for those of you who don't remember from our previous conversation about all this. All right. What are you going to do first before we go back into our conversation here?
We're going to play a song called Better Days.
Better Days.
Left my home a long time ago. Never looked back, but I never looked forward. Never thought much about the road I'm on, but that's a long time ago. Me and Dad, we never got along. Never talked much about going on. Never could admit that we both was wrong. But that's a long time ago. And I'll be damned, life caught up with me. Wish I'd known before, guess what I know now. Instead of waiting for better days. A long time ago, she was the only one I knew for sure. When she left, I thought I loved no more. But that's a long time ago. When I was a boy, life was simple and true. But that was a long time. But I'm still kind of the same, and I never change my ways. And there's thoughts I learned where to, and I no longer subscribe to. And I'm tired of being last. We're all pieces of our past. Never doubt the master plan. Better live your life when you still can. If you feel me, let me hear you shout it out. And I'll be damned, life caught up with me. Wish I'd known before, I guess what I know now. Instead of waiting for better days. And I'll be damned, life caught up with me. I wish I'd known before, I guess what I know now. Instead of waiting for better days.
Harry Fowler and Mark Barron, Sinners and Saints. If I'm not mistaken, you can see a video of this not this performance, but of that song. I think it's on YouTube. Mm-hmm. On this stage.
Yep.
I'm having deja vu.
Yeah.
We'll hear more from them before we go today as well. Jeff Hain is with us from Creative Wolfing, where he is music editor. Greg McCraw is owner of Max Music, and James Willimore is founder and executive director of a local record company called Croquet Records that we're going to talk about. Since you cover all this music in Creative Wolfing, and since you promote all this music, is Are music, live music goers in Charlotte, are they fickle? Do they like something 1 week and decide, well, that's passé, now we're going to move on to some other kind of music? Or do they find something that they like and support it?
I think it's a little bit of both, probably. I think there are bands that come through and will sell out every time, and there are also the bands that will come through and sell out a show and then 6 months later come through and there's half the people there and you wonder, what happened? I don't know that there's any kind of temperature gauge for that. That's just my opinion. He might have a different...
If there were a temperature gauge, I'd like to find it. It would make my life easier. But I would agree. I wouldn't necessarily call the audiences here fickle.
Mm-hmm.
The good news is there are more people going out to music these days. There are more people in Charlotte, obviously. There are more younger people. And I think at most of the venues that I work in, we've probably had more sellout shows going into this year, end of last year, beginning of this year, than we've had in the past.
I was going to say something earlier, too, talking about the more people going out and the increased volume. I wonder if I wonder if it's tied hand in hand with, like you were saying, more people are getting their music digitally and not CDs and don't have that tangible item anymore. Mm-hmm. So you hear the music all the time, and going to a live show might be the next best thing, that tangible thing you can hold on to going and seeing them.
Greg mentioned just a second ago younger people going out, and you have kind of a criticism of the way we have music in venues like this, because a lot of younger people, like 16, 17, 18, can't come in because they can't be served alcohol. And a lot of music is where alcohol is served.
Yeah, I asked a lot of the smaller, like, local bands what one of the biggest problems that they see in that there's not really a lot of all-ages venues.
Mm-hmm.
And
what would that look like, an all-age venue? Seriously.
Well, there, we...
this is help. One.
Is it?
This is an all-age venue, yeah.
Pass the whiskey. Come on.
Yeah, there's some good ones out here, but there's not a lot that really cater to, I think, some of the smaller bands. They end up playing like house shows or in basements of warehouses, and mm-hmm. those venues don't really last too long, you know, before they have to close or move for whatever reason. So there's not a lot of venues that do that. And all ages venues, though, I guess it has to do with alcohol laws and all.
And once again, this plays into your idea of having a kind of a non-profit or a not-for-profit venue that would act not unlike the McCall Center for Visual Arts does, but for music. How would that work? How do you see that working?
Well, there's really kind of two different things. One thing is non-profit recording studios that would offer, like, artist residencies. You can find them in some other... you can find them in some other cities like Boston and Atlanta. And then another thing would be a nonprofit collective-like space that could do all-ages shows. There's one called Mr. Roboto up in, I think it's Pittsburgh. It's a cooperative nonprofit. And because of that, there can, you know, be a little bit more choosing, I guess, in who they pick. It's not about... You know, like a lot of the venues here, they have to make their living by selling drinks and all.
Sure. Your record company is not for profit. It's non-profit. Correct me. It's non-profit or not for profit?
Which 501c3.
Okay. And that's a new idea to me. Is it a new idea in the country, or are there other companies like yours doing this? And how do you do it? Like, between every cut, is there a fundraiser? People asking to call this number and give us money?
Yeah, actually...
Sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, we really have just getting started. Last year, we formed our board of directors, and we had to go through the whole process to become a 501c3. And so this spring, we're signed our first band, Melt. They're a local band here from Charlotte. And at first, we're focusing on a lot of the crowdfunding campaigns to get started up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, such as Kickstarter. And, you know, once we can kind of show that what we can do, then we can start looking at things like foundation grants, some sponsorships, you know, since we're a nonprofit.
And this would be better for music, better for the artist than for profit, because...
Well, one of our things is that the artists keep all the rights to their music, the publishing rights and all. So we're just trying to help them get their music out there. With our first release, we want to be able to put it out on a 12-inch vinyl record. So we're, you know, trying to do that and hopefully have bands kind of step up. We want to be an incubator and get them ready for, like, other record labels, you know, just their first release. And so once they have some experience like that and can build a crowd, then they might draw some interest from larger record labels.
And Greg, you and Jeff have both said that we are better off today than we were 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And I know that you have blamed our Charlotte being late to the party on some of this music on radio, on the lack of independently operated radio stations. And many people may not understand that. They understand it.
Apparently so.
The iHeart radios of the world. And, well, I think and
that
people
was my,
like
that was my point before, that we're at a very disruptive stage. So I think a lot of people living in Charlotte were not hearing this music, and that in turn kept bands from coming to Charlotte because they had no gauge of what sort of response they would get because they didn't know how many spins they were getting on a radio station.
They weren't
here.
Getting any, probably, in many
they
cases.
They probably weren't getting any, and now that matters much less. And in the world today, it matters much less because everyone's getting their music delivered in a different way. So more bands are willing to take a risk, come to Charlotte, and as we have...
How influential in terms of changing things has Pandora been? Has Spotify been? iTunes, for that matter?
YouTube. I mean, I think it's all been
Vivo or whatever it is.
I mean, I really that's what's making the difference. And again, I think national artists are willing to come here now based on the success of other artists coming to town who weren't getting radio play. So I think that's one of the reasons things are ticking up very quickly.
You know, we have a lot of conversations with people from Blumenthal Performing Arts for whom you do some booking, but when we talk about the Broadway series, we are no longer a second-tier city. We now get first-run Broadway tours, and sometimes we get them really before we should because of the reputation that Charlotte has built as a theater-going town. You're saying also that we're no longer a second-tier music city. Moving out of
we're moving out of second tier. Yeah, I have this discussion with agents a lot. I try to convince them that we're not second tier anymore.
And you book for places like the Evening Muse and the Double Door, and you also book for the Belk and the Knight and the McGlowan. There's obviously a difference. You can't fill the Belk unless you're big time.
Correct. And I think it's the nice thing about my company. I'm able to take an artist and put them in what I believe is the right room in Charlotte. If it's 120 people at the Evening Muse, 1,000 people across the street at the Neighborhood Theater, or over 2,000 people at the Belk. And each room has its own different vibe as well. So certain artists fit much better here than they would, say, at the Neighborhood Theater.
Is it because of the size of the room, or is it because of the location in town? What is it?
It's a combination of all of those things. It's a combination of the people who are accustomed to going out to certain clubs or certain rooms.
So the track record in terms of getting a booking in Charlotte, is it important that you as the artist have a track record, or is it important that Charlotte has the track record?
It's both, but it's certainly very important to draw a national artist to this town that Charlotte have a track record, that we are known for people coming out and listening to live music, and Perry said it before, not just cover bands. But
how big do you have to be before you can fill a sizable room like the Knight Theater or the McGlowan, which I think is over 600 seats? Can you be local and fill the McGlowan Theater, or do you have to be somebody with a name that we bring in from out of town?
Certainly locals have played McGlowan. It's 730 is the capacity.
Is it?
I you know the capacity that stuff, don't of every room in town.
I'll quiz you on it.
But it's generally reserved for national acts that are coming through. The same with the Knight. Certainly the Belk, that would be a hard sell, 2,000 or 2,100 people.
Right.
And then kind of related to that, the smaller venues, have a lot of them have really benefited from, like we talked about earlier, the neighborhoods growing up. So people, they get accustomed to going out you know, to the venues in Noda or Plaza Midwood every week, and it doesn't matter to them who's playing. So a lot of local bands, that's helped.
Are you optimistic about the success of your record company?
Yeah, I definitely hope so. there's been some success here in Charlotte. Self-Aware Records has been around for like 5 years. They're local, and they've been putting out a lot of great releases, and they've been helpful to me. So it's a good community.
I'm glad they're self-aware because I was not aware. So. That's James Willimore, is founder and executive director of Croquet Records. Greg McCraw, owner of Max Music. They book acts all over the place. Jeff Hain, music editor of Creative Loafing. And before we go, we're going to hear a little bit of music here from Perry Fowler and Mark Barron, Sinners and Saints from the Evening Muse in Noda. And thank you all for the hour. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you for having us. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much.